You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Monster House presents
Monster Talks, a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Kick-Ass News, Movie Therapy, and Therapist Uncensored. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com.
An Air Force veteran and former intelligence official is going public about a secret government UFO recovery program he says has been collecting alien spacecraft for...
The bombshell claim about UFOs. A former U.S. intelligence official, an Air Force veteran, claims a top secret program is withholding evidence of alien spacecraft.
Certainly interesting. The military was...
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
It was funny timing with this Mick West interview. Ever since the 2017 New York Times piece on UAPs, a piece which I still believe only saw publication due to a massive deterioration in the editorial integrity of that newspaper, there's been a continuing campaign to change the narrative around UFOs. Only it's such a ruse. These press releases masquerading as journalism are all rooted in the same cluster of enthusiastic believers who are being very, very deceptive in their approach, trying to appear respectable through what I can only describe as credibility bootstrapping. They've used money and influence to get their narrative into both U.S. federal government and major news outlets. These stories contain narratives that the witnesses and cited experts probably believe, but it's all cleverly crafted to seem more plausible, more widely believed, more respectable. Yet it's the same old nonsense with a new paint job. You can't go paint a rusty Yugo and put a three-pointed star on the hood and call it a Mercedes. Well, I mean, you can call it a Mercedes, but it will not be one. This latest news story, I'll link to it in the show notes, didn't tell me anything new or startling, but then again, I realized I probably read these things with a lot more critical analysis than the target audience. Now, that's not a brag. Building your critical analysis skills is increasingly the very minimum that you need to get by in a world that's developed frictionless funnels to supply us with a constant stream of shiny, interesting, but ultimately vapid content. Take this latest story. Once again, it's written by Leslie Keene and Ralph Blumenthal. They're the dynamic duo of turd polishing, weaving hearsay, rumor, and anecdote into a simulacra of hard-breaking news. The story headline is...
Intelligence officials say U.S. has retrieved craft of non-human origin.
Now, normally I'd say start there with the unpacking, but we should probably step back one more remove and see where this thing's first being published. It's on The Debrief, an internet news outlet or fancy blog built by Micah Hanks and some other paranormal researchers. The Debrief looks like a quasi-political blog site. It's a very nice layout, but if you don't know who the people are behind it, you might mistake it for a more professional mainstream news outlet. The content of the article itself is full of, this guy works for the government and this person was in the military, constantly pointing at credentials and experience and job titles, all of which would be unnecessary if there was any actual hard proof that the statements in the story are really true. Leslie Keene was the last paramour of the abduction researcher Bud Hopkins, and Blumenthal is the biographer of John Mack. These are UFO people, and they should have about the same credibility as Linda Moulton Howe and her conspiracy of cattle mutilations coverage. Which is to say, all of this story is hearsay and anecdotes prettied up and put in a fancy, respectable suit. But a fancy suit will not stop bullshit from stinking. So, we'll be continuing our conversation with Mick West, who you may recall from part one is a retired video game developer who spent many years becoming skilled at figuring out what's really going on in UFO videos, photos, and narratives. But Mick can't do this all by himself. We all have to learn the skills of deeper reading and critical analysis to figure out when we're being tricked. But still, I appreciate that investigators like Mick are willing to crawl over that embankment and charge out across the wasteland against the ceaseless waves of nonsense which humans are wont to create. If you can't be a warrior for truth, you need to at least learn to defend the last battlefield, your own mind.
Monster Dog.
So, Mick, you're talking about personal experiences, and so I want to get personal with you for a second, and I don't know if this is real because I found it on Wikipedia, but Wikipedia says that when you were a child, you believed you had psychic abilities. Yeah. And I'm wondering if that was true and what experiences or beliefs you had at the time.
Well, I think pretty much everybody has tried to use the Force at some point. You know, anybody who's watched Star Wars, especially as a young person.
Young Padawan, I believe, is the...
Like, you think that wouldn't it be great if I could move things with the power of my mind? So this is a perfectly ordinary thing for people to try, especially young people. Thing is, like, if you try something and it works, then you're going to be convinced that you actually have psychic power. So if perhaps you, I don't know, like you're holding a piece of paper in your hand and you think move and it actually moves because the wind is moving it or something like that, you could be convinced fairly easily, especially as a young person, that you have psychic powers. And for me, I had this kind of like, I guess like an origin story where it was very simple. It was just, there was a raffle at school where you got tickets. And I stole some of my lunch money and bought a couple of tickets. And I remember like willing the first one to be drawn, and it was drawn. And I willed the second one to be drawn, and it was drawn immediately after that. And to me, this just seemed miraculous. You know, I mean, there probably was only like 100 tickets or something in there, so it wasn't that amazing. But you know, since I thought that I actually did it myself, I became convinced that you know, I had psychic powers. I think I was probably like 7 or 8 or something at the time.
So, you could be forgiven, yeah.
And, you know, at the time, I believed all kinds of strange things. Like, I can't remember if I still believed in the Tooth Fairy at that time, but and it wouldn't be that long since I believed Santa was bringing me presents. But, you know, I was religious at the time. I was raised Catholic, so I believed, you know, a variety of essentially supernatural things that if you pray, God will give you things. God will help you. If you pray and someone will get well. So, you know, essentially, there was this kind of mainstream psychic power of prayer, which was acceptable to believe in. And then there's this slightly less acceptable thing to believe in, which is this more supernatural magic type of psychic power. And I stopped believing after a while because it didn't actually work. So whenever I tried to do things like read people's minds and guess what cards they had, you know, I didn't have any success. And you know, eventually I realized that was nonsense. And I eventually realized that the religion really didn't have very much to back it up either. And I kind of stopped believing in that. And I guess that kind of led me into the skepticism because I once believed and then I realized it wasn't true and moved to the other side.
And we have seen that a lot with skeptics where they've had some kind of experience and or believe that they've had an ability and then that's been falsified, and so they've come to the side of skepticism. But I just wanted to mention too that we just did an episode, speaking of Catholicism, we just did an episode on incorruptible corpses. Mm. That was an interesting topic.
Yeah, that's the type of thing that would have interested me as a young man. I used to read Unexplained magazine, which is a semi-periodical type thing. Mm-hmm. It was like a collect all the issues type thing. So they got a new one every month for like 2 years or something. But they talked about things like that, incorruptible corpses, or things like spontaneous human combustion. They just seem so fascinating.
Yeah.
The idea that, like, you know, some corpses wouldn't, you know, and that was, you know, that's something in the Catholic Church, obviously, that, you know, some of the mm-hmm. saints, their bodies didn't decay. But like spontaneous human combustion was just fascinating too, because it just seems so weird and out of the realm of, you know, even my Catholic beliefs. You know, what possibly be going on there? It was like a whole different world if spontaneous human combustion was actually real.
Right.
It's wicked cool. What?
Yeah, literally.
Exactly.
I see what you did there.
See? Speaking of tenured professors getting into some stuff, have you got any thoughts about Avi Loeb and Oumuamua?
I do. Avi Loeb stands alone in his belief that Oumuamua is a interstellar spaceship remnant. Most astrophysicists, I don't think that. They think that it's some kind of asteroid, and they think that the slight changes in acceleration as it passes through our solar system are just some quirk of its shape and the way it's venting hydrogen or something like that. But he's become convinced, I think. And I think he's kind of got in with the UFO crowd. And I think a lot of the people... Mm-hmm. who haven't had some kind of personal experience, the reason that they get into UFOs is basically the same reason Harry Reid got into UFOs. They listen to people who are very good talkers, people who spin a very good story, tell a very good tale. Not, people are not necessarily like lying or anything like that, but people who believe that UFOs are aliens or something really strange, and they're very knowledgeable about the subject, and they can speak very well about the subject. And their goal, their personal goal, is to convince you that UFOs are something that's, you know, amazing and worth investigating. So I think, you know, Harry Reid back in the day, he got introduced to a group of people and he got convinced, and so he got into Robert Bigelow's circle. And I think Avi Loeb, even though, you know, he's a genius professor, PhDs, lots of accolades, I think, you know, he's just become convinced, you know, partly because he did his own work on Oumuamua, and, you know, he wants that to be correct, but also because he's talked to the crowd of people who are interested in UFOs, and they've convinced him that there's something to it. And there's it's not that hard to convince people if you are a strong believer in eyewitness accounts. There's some very compelling eyewitness accounts, but there isn't very good physical evidence. So I think he's a professor. He kind of believes in science, and he recognizes that eyewitness accounts aren't going to convince people. So now he's personally being convinced, but he needs the evidence to convince other people. He needs the scientific evidence. And so he's basically set up this Galileo project to try to find this evidence. And the Galileo Project has a few different things, one of which is looking for new Oumuamuas, another one is looking for near-Earth objects, near-Earth orbit objects that might be aliens. And the other one is basically positioning giant telescopes in strategic locations and trying to take photos of UFOs. And he's got these stations that they've developed, where they've got like cameras that scan the sky, and when they detect something that's a bit UFO-ish, they focus the big telescope on it and take photos of it. And the idea there is that if you can get a close-up photograph of a UFO, then that proves that UFOs are really something. Of course, what's going to happen is just they'll get some close-up photos of faraway objects, like birds and planes and balloons. It would be great if they get close-up photos of an alien spaceship, but history has taught us that when things are far away and mysterious and you get closer to them or you get bigger binoculars, they become visible and not so mysterious. And I fully expect that's all that's going to happen.
Yeah, I as someone who's had a lifelong interest in cryptids, but has been super skeptical for decades, I still applaud people who can manage to put together networks for looking at stuff. And I'm always of the mind that if you want to go look for Bigfoot, do that. If you want to spend money and put a network of cameras up to look for Bigfoot, do that. That's great. And same thing for UFOs, all this. I'm all for looking. But like you, I think he's been persuaded. His beliefs are maybe – his belief in the truth of the hypothesis may be a lot larger than the likelihood the evidence would suggest, you know. And and I think this is really important. One astronomical event should not get you to join up with the UAP UFO people, because those are really radically different. Seeing a body way out at the end of the solar system is not the same. It's not the same thing as, you know, all the lights over Denver or whatever, you know. It's just so I don't know why I said Denver instead of Phoenix, but whatever.
I know why you said Denver.
Karen, this is your fault. But
I think he's kind of he's kind of extrapolating things a bit much. He's kind of like thinking, well, if Oumuamua, according to my theory, is an interstellar spaceship, like a sail from an interstellar spaceship, then he did some back of the envelope math and said, like, oh, there's so many stars, there's so many directions that the probes could go from stars. What are the odds that one would hit our solar system? It's very low, unless there are lots and lots of them. So he basically did some simple math that says that the universe is teeming with probes. And so you can just extrapolate from that. Well, if it's teeming with probes, then it's quite likely that some of them have already arrived here and they've set up shop and they have an undersea base and they're sending out little UFOs to spy on us. It's a short step in the logic of ufology from Oumuamua to a centuries-old undersea base making UFOs.
Right.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So, Mick, if we could talk about your book for a little while.
Sure.
Yeah, you've written a book and it's done very well, Escaping the Rabbit Hole. And the book's about helping people out of their irrational conspiracies. Can you tell us a little bit about the feedback you've had, and I guess from both sides, from believers and skeptics?
Yeah, I haven't had that much feedback from believers because they tend not to read the book. It's difficult to get someone to read something like that because they believe that it's just basically part of some government cover up, or it's just going to make fun of them or something like that. But I very much try not to make fun of people, and the government isn't paying me anything. But the feedback from readers and the more general readers has been pretty good. It's really about helping people to understand the mindset of a conspiracy theorist so you can actually talk to them, and some basically simple tips for how you can talk to them. I go into a lot of detail on the individual conspiracies like chemtrails and 9/11 and even flat Earth, the core of the book is just a series of simple advice steps, which I break down into the very, very simple three-step process. If you want to help someone, a friend of yours who believes in conspiracy theories, the first step is establishing effective communication, which just means getting past the kind of shouty phase of the discussion, getting past the frustration of this person being a different person to who you thought, and getting them past the idea that you are mocking them or you're laughing at them or you think that they're crazy. You've really got to find a way to be able to talk to someone before you can start, say, you know, for want of a better word, debunking their conspiracy theories. And a big mistake a lot of people make is they just start wading in and start trying to fact check everything that the person says. And that doesn't work if you haven't already established effective communication by kind of getting to know them, establishing common ground and letting them know what you think and asking them what they think, and then just having a good conversation. So there's this three-step process, you know, establish effective communication, and then supplying useful information is the next thing. It isn't necessarily debunking things. It could just be stuff that's additional context that they might be missing. Like a lot of people have what we call a crippled epistemology. And epistemology is kind of, you know, how people know things, their knowledge system. And when you have a crippled epistemology, it means that you're getting all of your information, your knowledge, things you think you know to be true, from a limited number of information sources. Like, you know, the simplest example is someone who only watches Fox News. They're going to get a very skewed view of the news. And perhaps, you know, someone who only watches CNN would get a skewed view as well, but perhaps not quite so skewed. But, you know, if you only have one information source, you're not getting a good understanding of the world and how the world works. So supplying you useful information can be just helping them understand how the world works. But then you can also, on top of that, give them information that disproves some of their particular beliefs, their particular strange conspiracies or whatever. And then the third step, which is very short, is just giving it time. Because people often expect that if you explain what's wrong with a conspiracy theory to someone and show them what's wrong, then that's all they need. But it doesn't work like that. It takes a lot of time for things to sink in.
Well, yeah.
And for you to establish, you know, what actually needs to be discussed, and for them to accept it. It can take sometimes months, sometimes years.
Yeah, or never.
Well, or never. But you don't get a new belief instantly. And getting rid of an old belief is never going to be. It's got to be. It takes time. It takes time for sure.
Sure.
But
it does.
You reminded me though, the epistemology. I know a lot of people recently seem to be using this concept that if it makes them angry, it's probably true. And I call that epistemology, which I think seems to account for a lot of what's going on in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got that kind of knee-jerk reaction in various ways as well. You know, it's if somebody says something, it must be true. Like if you think a particular person is very believable, so you believe everything that Tucker Carlson says, then if he tells you something, you're likely to think it is true. And if someone says that Tucker Carlson is wrong, then you're going to think that they're making things up. So people aren't. Yeah, this is new. People have not been using critical thinking since the dawn of time. But people aren't really considering the facts, and they aren't thinking about it. They're choosing a side, essentially, or choosing a person, or choosing a certain narrative, and then they're going with what fits within that. So yeah, if something contradicts their narrative, they're going to get angry, and that anger will mean that, you know, that they are right and you are wrong.
As I often say, gullibility was developed in 1923.
I'll look it up.
So Mick, in all honesty, I want to know, this is maybe more to help myself than the audience, but maybe it'll help the audience too. How do you keep yourself going? Because you not only are you relentless, and believe me, I understand the addiction of solving a mystery. It is very much a thing that Kieran and I can't get enough of. But even so, people get burned out, but you are not just facing mysteries, you're also facing angry people who don't want you to say that their ideas are wrong. So how do you keep yourself going?
Well, yeah, it's a variety of things. I mean, there's always something new with UFOs. There's always new UFO cases coming out, and sometimes they're big cases and they're high profile, and it's very exciting trying to get an explanation for them as quickly as you can and still obviously be accurate. So that's always a fun aspect of it. But also, the people are interesting. I wrote this book on how to talk to conspiracy theorists, and I'm still learning stuff all the time. There's actually a second edition of the book coming out, which comes out in a month, in June 20th. So that's going to incorporate some of the stuff I've learned about UFOs and newer conspiracy theories like QAnon and anti-vaccine stuff. So there's always new stuff, and there's always new people, and there's always new challenges. And any new individual who comes along is going to present a unique challenge in terms of communication and establishing some kind of understanding. It's not like I'm playing games with them and I'm trying to change their minds. You know, I only want to help them if they believe things that are wrong. So if someone comes along with this weird, strange belief that I think is incorrect, then yeah, I see it's something as a challenge to help them out of that belief. But with UFOs, mostly it's about the fun of figuring stuff out. So, I'm a video game programmer, and I use my video game programming experience to code like simulations of these UFO videos and try to figure out the math behind them. And it's a lot of fun, and it exercises my brain.
We've seen you on TV a lot as a talking head.
Oh, that's true too.
Yeah. Doing exactly that.
Yeah. I was just thinking though, if a video game hunting down or simulating UFOs, if you could figure a way to add a score.
Well, I was thinking if I was to do a game about UFOs, I would do it from the perspective of the aliens and trying to hide from the skeptics and the investigators. It's just simply like you're uncovering things. Isn't that interesting? But the idea of sneaking around in UFOs and abducting people and doing things like that is kind of an interesting thing.
You
do a lot from the alien perspective, because you'd have all kinds of interesting technology.
It sounds like since there's different breeds of aliens, you could do it as a card game and have each species have its own deck, and, ability to block others or try to expose others.
Oh, there you go. But speaking of this kind of thing, Mick, we've got a final question to ask you. Blake might have some follow-up questions too, but we always like to ask our guests, what's your favorite monster?
Well, as a kid, my favorite monster was the Yeti. I always found that to be like really interesting, fun story type thing. But I think now my favorite monster would be the aliens who abduct and cut up cattle. It just seems like the most bizarre thing for an alien to be doing. Like, apparently they come down. Sometimes they use their tractor beams to suck up cows into their spaceships, and then they cut parts off them, and then they drop them back down to Earth. And that's just such a weird thing.
As you do,
Indeed. It's a little bit like the alien in Nope, which kind of...
Oh, yeah. So, but the perfectly good cows, and they totally wreck them.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's just it's an unknown monster as well. So that kind of adds to the mystery of it. We don't know what it looks like. It's a mysterious presence in a mysterious craft doing mysterious things to poor cows.
Yeah. It's a really common one out here in Denver. Lots of claims, I guess, on the kind of agriculture... Rural areas around here. Lots of cows.
Abductions.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that valley near you that they were always talking about, the abductions or the cattle mutilations. I'm old and the name has escaped me, but it'll come back about 30 minutes from now. So
there you go. Me too.
I'm thinking here of the San Luis Valley, a.k.a. the Mysterious Valley, which paranormal enthusiast Christopher Brown has written about extensively.
Well, Mick, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. This was great.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for adding your calm and measured, rational voice to the chatter on Twitter. I really appreciate that. So
No, that's fun.
Someone
too.
Has to. Yeah.
And I say, and obviously not more than just Twitter. But speaking of which, is there this is the part where we would have you pimp your stuff? Is there? We've mentioned your book, we've mentioned your websites, but is there anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I have a YouTube channel. This is YouTube/MickWest. YouTube.com/MickWest, and that's I have a bunch of different, I guess, investigation and debunking videos. There's a lot there, a lot for everybody. But
outstanding.
Mostly UFOs at the moment, but as they dig down, there's some old stuff that's quite interesting.
Cool. Well, I will add all that to the show notes so people, you can go down and click and get to those things. And check out MetaBunk for sure, and get Mick's book, and keep watching the skies.
Thank you, Mick.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You were just listening to an interview with mystery investigator Mick West. You can find Mick's work at his site metabunk.org, and we've got a link to his book, Escaping the Rabbit Hole, in the show notes. Mick will also be one of the speakers at this year's CSICon in 2023 in October. You can find more information about that event at csiconference.org. Monster Talk's theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys, and somehow I never get tired of it. I hope you feel the same way. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this show during your busy week.
Been a Monster House presentation.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.